Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Boys, we are back in studio. It seems like we just did this, you know, and it seems like the last time we did it, I was really glum. Is that true?
Glum was the word that was used by many of our followers on Twitter. They said you gave them a case of the Mondays.
Oh, great. Well, you know, being that it is my job to make them happy, I will try my best. I'll do my darndest. This morning to
the unhappy rant
to make them happy, Big R, because you know it all depends on me and Christ, obviously, and Tim Keller, which we'll get to. But
they depend on us to make them happy, or at least make them snarky, which in my mind are real similar things.
Doesn't the Bible say, "So far as it depends on me, try your best to make everyone happy"? I've lived my life up to this point, so.
Be careful. We're getting a little Michael Gunger with that passage.
So much as it depends Easy. On us and what we base our hope in, listen to podcasts for all of your happiness.
And Michael Gunger, who's been described as, quote, the male Rachel Held Evans.
That was a listener quote, which was I think that was a strong comparison.
I think it was great.
What do you think of when you hear somebody say, now, when you hear somebody described as the male Rachel Held Evans?
You're trying to goad me into a joke that I made.
I'm not trying to goad you into it. That was just an open door. That was like, hey. Here's the pathway to gold. Oh, do you want to enter?
Look at Ted and his discernment.
Look at me and my discernment. I made a very funny joke off the air in reference to that, which I'm not going to make on the air because of how mature and discerning I am.
That's right.
Oh, I forgot that. I forgot that's the podcast.
We are nothing if not discerning and mature, Ronnie.
I feel like our audience is really smart. I feel like we have a really smart group of people, and they can probably like leap to the conclusion that that I made off the air, and they could probably make the joke themselves. You know, we're just leading them to it.
That's right. We will walk them to the door, but they must walk through it.
You know, so as long as we're on this Gungor kid, let's do a couple minutes on this. What's the deal with this guy? This guy says he wants praise music that's not about like Jesus or the cross or sin or
Specifically the blood of Christ and anything pertaining to penal substitutionary atonement, and that's a phrase that he used in his own Twitter feed, not me trying to, you know, be the 30-year-old white Calvinist theology guy.
Who's this guy? Why do we care about this guy? What has this guy ever done?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and guess you don't care about.
No,
this
I don't.
Guy,
I know nothing about this guy. But why do people care about him?
He was a really popular musician. He might still be amongst Christian artists a few years ago, and he was sort of one of those authentic Christian artists, not the happy clappy praise guys. And so people resonated with him, and then he sort of took a theological hard turn away from what we might consider quote unquote orthodoxy, and and so now he is, people who formerly loved him now hate him, and Calvinists love to rip him. But recently he caused a stir on Twitter because he basically said, why do we always sing about the blood sacrifice of Jesus if we don't have anything else to sing about? What are we even doing here? Which
you can imagine made a lot of people really, really happy.
Yeah, I mean,
now is business booming for this guy? Because I feel like whoever we rip, like their sales just go through the roof.
To clarify, you don't mean we the podcast, you mean we the reformed world.
No, we the reform, the kind of reformanati, man. Yeah.
I'm sure that the reformed posse has done great things for this guy's core audience, because you know that they rose up to defend him with picks and shovels and pitchforks and torches. So
that was probably in his label's marketing plan, I'm guessing. That was like it was in a PowerPoint in around a conference table. Like, we're gonna make the Calvinists mad, and then, you know, sales.
Yeah, because we got to boost sales. But here's my question, man. I mean, is this guy? I mean, I don't know much about Gungor, and is that how you pronounce his name, number one? And number two,
that sounds like a Lord of the Rings character to me.
It does. It is a Lord of the Rings character. But is he just so like fully out of our tribe? I just don't really understand like where his popularity is at. And number what are some of his songs that we used to sing or we're still singing and we're trying to act like, well, it's okay, we sing that because those songs were great. I mean, what did he sing? Like, what would any of our audience even know from him, including us?
I mean, I think he, I don't know. I never listened to him. I mean, my apologies to all of your friends in the music industry, Ronnie, but I really don't listen to any Christian music. So I know him.
Yeah, I don't know why you just apologize to my friend. You guys are my friends. I'm with us.
That's right. Yes.
So just hashtag. You can just have, yeah, hashtag, just have to qualify that. No, I'm just like, I don't know if I've ever heard this dude. Okay.
Well, he was part of like Passion and some different things. And so he at one point was sort of associated with like Crowder and some of that. So he did some sort of different renditions of worship music. And I know he wrote his own stuff, and I don't know his music at all. I just know the reputation he had, because he was the guy who, when you said, "I'm tired of worship music," people would be like, "But have you heard
this dude?"
You know, he was that guy. Yeah. And the answer to that question is still no, I haven't heard him.
He was kind of the artistic, like indie rock worship guy. He was kind of the guy that was on the cusp of all of that, is what I felt like. And this was obviously a few years ago. It was the same thing for me. I mean, I cannot tell you even 5 to 10 years ago, how, like almost daily, people would ask me, "Dude, you must be into like Gungor." And I'm like, "Who?" You know, again, it was like, "Wait a minute, are we talking like the Hobbit trilogy, or do you want me to go back to Lord of the Rings?" I'm not sure.
Is this like a new Dungeons and Dragons game? Like, what am I supposed to be into here? I'm so confused.
Yeah, I never got it, because I typically don't listen to a lot of praise and worship of that ilk, if I can use the word ilk on the air. Is that cool, Big T? Are we good with that word, or is that going to be too offensive?
Maybe it's your program.
I think ilk is good. It's not too stereotypy.
Thank you. Boys, I feel so affirmed now.
Baby, let's talk about something better than this Gungor situation. And it's another situation that we have brewing, as it were, as a company.
Ooh, I see what you did there. I was strong.
Boys, we are a business. We are a business interest. We are in the business of making deals. And we have made a deal with a coffee roaster. A coffee roaster who is not originally from America, which makes him very exotic. And he has...
And politically correct or incorrect, depending on which side of the fence you fall on.
Yeah. It makes him perfect, is what I'm saying.
That's right.
And what he has is a special blend of coffee that he's created for this program, this very program, that we are going to begin selling. It's called the Happy Rant Signature Blend. And we're going to begin selling this through the show page, I believe. So we're just ironing out the last few kind of dotting the I's, crossing the T's, as it were, on this deal. And I'm very excited. I think I've sent you guys some pictures of the beans. So I had a tasting with this gentleman the other day. And let me just say, this guy he's all in on coffee. He's committed to coffee. The whole family, you know, they're very much about the aesthetics, the aroma, just the whole world that is coffee roasting. And I'm excited. I'm excited to share this with you guys and with our listeners. And remember last week when I was all glum and when I ruined everyone's week, and everyone, you know, of course, depends on me to remain happy. But I can honestly say that I'm enjoying this coffee, boys.
Oh, it is the better stuff. Ted found a better thing to talk about. Only this is great. Stuff.
Boys, can I talk about Trogs' podcast just for a second?
Yes, because he needs more marketing from us.
What's funny about this thing, man, is that so he's had literally every evangelical who's ever like written one word, everybody who's ever published like one thing in the reform space, he's already had on the program, right? So he's exhausted like all 12 of those guys. And this guy, this freaking guy, he'll text me trying to like harvest my Rolodex for people, but he's yet to invite me on the program. Isn't that funny?
Wow.
Would that be a bad time to say that I was on the podcast, but he just hasn't released it yet?
No. Like everybody, dude, yeah. Pipe, I know literally everyone I know, everyone I'm friends with has been on the podcast.
Maybe I have not been on the podcast. He's done this. He said, "Hey, Ronnie," he said, "someday I want to have you on."
Oh, you got that,
that's what I've gotten. That's what I've gotten. I've gotten a someday.
Yeah. Maybe that actually does make me feel better, because I was convinced that everybody who had written like you know, a sentence for publication who's even remotely reformed had already been on the podcast.
I mean, Big T, it might have been, you should probably come on someday. Like, it might even be less than a someday. So don't worry about it. We're together.
That's like a don't call me, I'll call you kind of thing. It's, I work in marketing. And so when people try to sell me stuff, that's essentially the phrase I use. It's more like, I'll let you know if what you do ever fits what we do.
Which is basically a really elegant way of saying, you know, we will never do business together.
That's right. Ever. Go away.
Well, Pipe, is there some significance to the fact that you recorded with Trogues a while back and it still hasn't been released? I mean, I can't imagine that the release schedule is too stacked right now.
I'm going to go ahead and guess that it is because, well, there's two things. One, I think strategically he might be trying to release it after my book release to do me a favor.
Oh, wow.
But I think it also, in looking at the names he's released, he's like going in descending order of fame. And so I'm further down the list than like Paul Tripp and Tripp Lee, who is his most recent release. So you have to kind of get through the A-listers before you get to whatever. What did we decide we are? C+D? Like, I don't remember.
Pipe, you just put whatever categorization you want on your listing.
A-listers. Let's just go with that. So, cool people first, then Barnabas Piper.
Well, I mean, hold on. Cool, you know, A-list, he eventually has to get to like at Jared C. Wilson and like Thorny.
I guarantee you both of those gentlemen have been on, or they've recorded, sure.
I don't know if Thorne has, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's connected with Jared C.
Oh, yeah. You know he's connected with Jared C.
Hey, by the way, Pipe, how was your time with Trogues on Only the Good Stuff? Give us like a 1 minute, like, you know, synopsis on that.
It was fun. It's an interesting format for a podcast because it's unlike this one where we like to poke fun at things. It's like a no complaining podcast, which I think he brought me on mainly to see if I could do it. You know, could I talk for 35 minutes without being negative? And I think I more or less pulled it off because I actually do enjoy lots of things. And I think it's kind of a cool concept to just basically talk about things that you recommend, but not like sales pitches, just like this is a thing that I've been enjoying. So I talked about like jazz music and Show Baraka's latest album, The Narrative, and humor and some different things that I'm like, these are things that I just really enjoy. And so I thought it went well. And he's a good host in that way because he didn't like over talk or over insert himself the way some hosts might in that situation. So all in all, I thought it was pretty good. And I'm interested to see how long he can carry this one out. Cause I mean, he's been going for like a solid 2 months at this point, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's out of control, man. Yeah. He's like on a 10-year run.
Like it's like he's turned a corner.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Well, enough about Trogues, boys. Let's talk about, let's talk about another huge bloated media event.
Yes.
That is the Oscars. And I don't know. It's not going to come as a surprise to anyone that I don't care about the Oscars and I haven't watched it in years. Pipe, I don't think you watched it either. Big R, you watched half of it, which means that you got through the first 7 hours of it. And then you clicked away.
Let me ask something real quick, Ted. So you like movies. Like you,
I love movies.
We've talked movies. Love. We talked film. Like you, this is the thing you have taught on. You've written about. Yep. You thoroughly enjoy and engage the medium of film. But you don't give a rat's behind about the Oscars. And I think that maybe seems a little at odds with one another. So suss that out for us.
No, I appreciate that, Pipe. That's a good question. You know, it's funny, man. I know. Years ago, we used to watch the Oscars religiously. And it was when we were young. It was when we were like in our 20s and we were dreaming a lot. And like, you know, I was writing like screenplays on the side and kind of dreaming about having them made. And, you know, we were in that headspace where it was really like a lot of fun energy to sort of watch these people, you know, getting dressed up in their finery and kind of worshiping one another on the red carpet and on the Oscars. And I don't know what happened. I think whether it was just getting older or having kids or getting some perspective or what, but I don't know. Several years ago, I just stopped caring and it just the whole thing became a really boring kind of self-parody, in much the same way that the Super Bowl is becoming. And even though I love football, and I love football more than I love films, to be honest, I kind of get the same feeling with the Super Bowl. You know, it's so just
it's like it's less about the thing that it's supposed to be about, and it's much
it's
more
less about
all
the thing that it's supposed to be about. Exactly. Like, I'd rather spend, you know, 2 hours just watching a film than watching a goofy, you know, overproduced joke of an event about films. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. And I think, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, push back on this, but hang on, I was taking a drink. We're all creative people. We're all authors. We've all done books. Ronnie's done music stuff. I've done movie stuff. Like, I think the more creative stuff you do, the more you realize that awards don't mean anything. I think we've probably all won awards for things that we weren't all that excited about. And we've probably lost awards for things that we thought were way better. And at the end of the day, like, am I excited when I get an award? Sure. But do I put a whole lot of stock in it? And do I think it means a whole lot? Like, not really. So,
and if, you know, if awards had any bearing on commercial success, you might feel differently about that, but they don't.
Yeah. No, they really don't, man. They really, really don't. Case in point, like, a picture won Best Picture and nobody's seen it and nobody will see it. And, you know, that happens every other year, it seems like. So, you know, it just, to me, doesn't mean a whole lot, but yet there's always a little bit of buzz about it. Big R, there was a situation with the Best Picture announcement, and you kind of watched this unfold. So what are your thoughts on it, babe?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, man, I didn't get very far. You know, I think I got to Best Supporting Actor, Actress, Viola Davis. I think that's as far as I got when she won it for.
That was when you ran out of groceries and and your generator burned out. And I mean, because it had been going for 32 straight hours at that point.
Yeah, seriously, that's when I had finished like my ninth pint of ice cream. There was nothing left in the freezer, and you know, all my good humor bars that our listeners have been sending the last month ran out, and so I was done at that point because I'm not just going to sit there without anything to eat, you know. But I just thought, I don't know, you know, it's one of these things, right, where you look like you're looking at something that you completely have no connection with. And you're looking at all of these people who are just in this industry, which is a closed industry, and they're all just enjoying each other. They're enjoying their own success. They're reveling in their own accomplishments and achievements. Mm. And it's almost like this thing where we're like standing back, like looking into this, like, you know, this bubble of which we like cannot penetrate or get into.
We are locked outside the cocktail party.
It's literally what it is. And there's a part of me that just thinks like, why would I do this? You know, I'm like, I enjoy some of the movies. I want to see the movies. I appreciate the artistic element of some of the movies that were even, you know, nominated, and the stories behind them. I like all of that. But to watch like the utter, you know, just like the glee and like the avarice and the greed, you know, on the faces of the people there that are just reveling in all of the praise and adulation. I guess maybe it like hits a nerve with me because I realize how close I am to some of those things and some of those tendencies. And you just see it like unabated, like when you watch the Oscars. I'm not trying to do commentary here, but I almost find it fascinating as much as I find it just like, you almost like start getting sick to your stomach, you know, as you're watching.
Dude, you really do. That's a really great point. I think everything you're saying is so true, man. And so spot on in terms of how we feel about it. Pipe, did you ever watch the Oscars? Did you ever have a history with this production?
I mean, I tried to watch it with some friends maybe 10, 15 years ago when I was in probably college age. And, even then, when I really like, I watched tons of movies because I had time to do it then, and so I was familiar with all the films, and I just was like, I couldn't care. And even then, it was much less of a show. Now you have entire like websites and shows devoted to the red carpet, you know, who wore it better and breaking down people's outfits, and like the first question they ask every actress is, "Who are you wearing?" and which is a really strange question, both grammatically as well as just the implications of it. You know, so there's this whole thing about how women shouldn't be sex objects, but then what we're focusing on is who wore it better you know, how much that gown costs and how flattering it is. And it's just everything about this is this sort of mixed message, because they're all politically left, which means they're all about the poor people, while they stand up there in $8,000 gowns and live, you know, up on the hillside in Los Angeles overlooking the ocean. And it's just this – it's this strange pile of I can't take you seriously.
I don't know what –
What's that?
Yeah, it's a series of contradictions.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole night is a series of contradictions.
And, I mean, and then at the very base of it, the awards – the movies that usually win awards are movies that are not that fun. Like, I like – part of the reason that Grammys is a fun show is because they play music that's fun. Like, even the pop music that I don't enjoy, I'm like, well, at least it's commercially successful, so a lot of people like it. You know, when an arty art house type of film wins, it's like 9 people care. And the rest of us feel like it's like the it's like the snob turning up the nose and being like, "Oh, you haven't heard of that film?" No, I haven't. Do you know why? Because nobody cares. That's why. Can the Marvel movies win an award for finding a way to get tens of millions of people to watch them? I feel like that's worthy of some notoriety.
True. Boys, we have one more item to get to while we still have a few minutes left, and that is it's a big news item, and we do breaking news on this program. It's a big item, and that is that Tim Keller is stepping down as pastor at Redeemer. And Big R, you broke this news to the group.
Should we give this a moment of silence? I feel like this deserves a moment of silence from 3 white reform dudes.
Absolutely.
Because give it a good 60 seconds, boys, which is zero commentary.
We need to recognize this. So I'm gonna give us a moment of silence. Okay, go.
By 60 seconds, I mean 0.6 seconds.
Big R, you're still talking. Here, go. Okay, now I want...
That was painful.
I know. I want each of you to...
Guys, I forget how to talk now. That was so long.
Well, you're going to have to talk, baby, because I'm asking you what was going through your mind during that moment of silence as you reflect on whether or not Christianity will survive without Timmy K.
Well, I mean, Big
T. Is he leaving Christianity?
That's the question.
He's not leaving Christianity. Okay. Let's be clear. This isn't a Rachel the Held Evans moment. This is
right. He's not Michael Gungor the older.
He's not Michael Gungoring all over the place.
Yeah, I think that's the question. I think the jury's out on that. I mean, will there be a reformed community? What's going to happen to the Gospel Coalition? Is Redeemer Church going to survive? Are we going to have a podcast this time next week? I think those are the kind of questions that we need to seriously consider, because this has implications, boys. Let's not make light of that.
Who is going to convince church planters that it's cool to plant churches?
In the city, most, you know, more specifically.
Like in these cool urban centers where everybody already wants to live. I don't understand who's going to convince church planters that that's the place to go.
Who's going to want to live in New York now?
You know?
I mean, what does New York have going for it anymore?
Just urban. I mean, people are moving everywhere. Out by the droves right now already.
They're literally.
This city stinks. You know, there's nothing to do here.
Get ready.
No, I mean, seriously, though. So, let's turn the corner. But, no, I don't know. I think it's interesting. I know some guys that are tight with TK, and so would you say he's
a friend of a friend?
Yeah, kind of a friend of a friend. So I kind of knew this was coming because I'd sort of heard some of the underground rumors of it breaking soon. And I don't know. I think I do always find it really interesting that because we live in sort of the media, you know, social media saturated culture that we're all living in, that, you know, something like that can even kind of alarm us, like, oh no, TK is, Timmy K is stepping down, even though at the same time, like, none of us live in Manhattan. He's not any of our pastor. None of us attend Redeemer. And yet, like, there's almost like a little bit of like an alarm that goes off in
like
everybody,
70.
You know? Like, yeah, and he's like up there. He's ready to retire. He's ready to step down, you know?
I mean, I'm sure every person who has been around the ministry has seen a pastor and went, that guy held on too long.
Absolutely.
And then Keller steps down and we're like, what are we going to do? Well, he's probably doing a healthy thing. Why don't we give him a high five and wish him well?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, now he can start writing – you know, who made the comment. Now he can start writing 5 or 10 books a week and just get on a little more rigorous release schedule.
Poor guy hasn't been able to publish anything. I hope he can find some time now.
Yeah. And, you know, also this is what he's doing too. I mean, here's a positive, right? So one of the big things is that he's trending away from mega churching, right? So like instead of being like the multi-site, all of his different sites now are going to become like their own separate smaller churches. So he's kind of going back to like his, you know, sort of more like a small town, but in a big city kind of a model. And I think it's going to be cool. I mean, honestly, you guys, I think Timmy, with all due respect to you and your pedigree, Barnabas P, I think Timmy K, I mean, I think, you know, he's really like the C.S. Lewis of our day. I think he's really like the Martin Luther of our, I think we're going to look back and like, people are going to be amazed of the things that he wrote and the things that he accomplished and just the influence that he had. I mean, it's so unique. Like he offered something so unique to Christian. I mean, again, he's just taken everything C.S. Lewis has ever written and basically sussed it out and contextualized it to like our day. I mean, that's really what he's done, but he's done it so articulately and brilliantly. We probably just don't really even understand like the impact of it because we're in the middle of it. You know, we've lived through it. But I mean, certainly he's just done something unlike anybody else.
Well, I think in terms of living authors, he's probably had as much or more impact on me or his writings have than anybody else. The thing that struck me about this is it seemed to engender fear in a lot of people that he was stepping down. And it made me wonder like what are people hanging their hopes on? I don't totally understand the response of fear. Like my response when I saw this was, huh, good for him, I guess. Like it didn't feel like my business. It felt like something notable. But at the same time, it was just like, he's still Tim Keller. He's still going to write books that are helpful. He's still going to be a cultural commentator. He's still going to be a theologian. And he's going to work at a seminary where he can train other people to be pastors. That doesn't sound like a step down in any way, shape, or form. I didn't get the frantic response to it. And it, you know, tying back into our conversation about the Oscars, it just felt like we almost have there's this necessity to make a spectacle out of things that are not spectacle worthy. Like this is worthy of going, boy, I hope that goes well for him. And that's about it.
Yeah. Like a faithful, like let's celebrate like a faithful dude, you know, no scandals, no controversy, you know, like just a dude that's been staying the course. He's done a lot. He's going to continue to do a lot. And by the way, man, you know, whenever somebody steps aside, they clear the path for somebody else. Like who is going to be the next guy to come behind him and have that kind of an influence. That's kind of what I'm interested in, right? So if Timmy K is like was the next generation C.S. Lewis, who's going to be the next generation's Timmy K? Like I find that like super interesting.
Do you think that part of the reason people are afraid is because so you get like Tim Keller and my dad who are both about the same age, you know, the late 60s, early 70s. Both of them step away from the pastorate within a couple years of each other, in a healthy way. You know, they're moving on to their sort of what they would probably consider their last chapter of ministry. But people who are influenced by them feel like they're losing a figurehead or a father figure. Is that part of it? Because I obviously have a different perspective on this because I actually have a father figure who is one of those guys. So I'm just – is that part of it? People feel like they're losing their mentor or their father figure or something along those lines?
Yeah, I think it's change, you know, and I think we buck against change. But even though, you know – again, the only connection most of us have with TK is either, you know, listening to a podcast or reading one of his books. And that's the only connection we're ever going to, you know, the only tangible physical connection we're ever going to have with him. And I think it's just a letting go. It's, you know, it's the letting go of an era, you know, because what it indicates is that he doesn't have much time left. And when you've had the level of influence he's had, I think it just unravels people. It reminds everybody of their mortality, you know, because he's been such an influential dude, as has your dad. And it's like, okay, so what does that mean? who's next and who's the next guy that we have to start putting our trust and reliance in. I think it speaks into a little bit of idolatry even. Yes. And all those types of things. And there's
question,
no doubt.
Question you just asked, like it turns my stomach because it, mm-hmm. who is the next guy we should be putting our trust in? And I just want to go, nobody. Don't trust anybody. Right. Not that
right.
way.
Right, but is it not true though? That's really the way that we, you know, we attach ourselves to yes. figureheads. We love it.
Yeah, I mean we define evangelicalism by eras of leadership. So this was the influencer for this stretch and then this stretch. And like in retrospect, I think that's okay where you can look back and go those were the key influential voices, but in the present, it does feel a lot like just scrambling from aisle to aisle at the grocery store, grabbing tabloids and going, yes. who do I need to know about next? And, yeah. And that kind of thing. And it's just, it does feel sort of oddly, you know, it's like evangelistic or evangelical voyeurism.
Well, cause we've created the culture. So it is what it is. And, you know, everybody's responsible for creating that until people stop being so concerned about things that in many ways don't concern them. It's just going to continue to elevate for sure. You know, Big T, why don't you riff on this for a few minutes, man? What do you got?
I got nothing except to say that, my money's on KDY, man, is the next Timmy K. I'm going loyal, man. Going old school.
So. No, I'm with you. No, I'm totally with you. I think that's valid. I wouldn't have put KDY in that camp, but it makes sense what you're saying, man. Suss it for a minute.
It's sneaky good, man. It's a sneaky good pick. He's not in an obvious huge media market right now, so there's growth potential, man. There's
kind of like Keller in New York, not an obvious big media market.
Dude, that's what I'm saying. KDY could be due for a move to New York. Like the ceiling is high, is what I'm saying. Like we haven't seen all that KDY is capable of. KDY is kind of like a pipe. I'll use an NBA analogy. He's kind of like the Greek freak. You know, yes. He's playing in Milwaukee right now, but like, you know, there's going to be some moves that happen in that guy's career. He's not always going to be in Milwaukee, and you know, he's going to land in a big media market and there's going to be superstardom ahead
As an aside, can you actually say the Greek freak's name?
Oh, man. Giannis
Antetokounmpo? I think it's Antetokounmpo, but I just wanted to get that out there on the air because it's fun for middle-class white people to try to say.
You were
going to
say it's fun for Ronnie, weren't you? You were going to say it's fun for Ronnie Martin. That's what you wanted to say.
I was going
to
say it's fun for listeners, but I really wanted to see if Ronnie had anything to say about the name Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Is that really how you pronounce it?
It is.
I feel like that name shouldn't even be allowed to be named. I feel like somebody shouldn't even be allowed to have that name.
It literally wraps in a circle on the back of his jersey. It's so long. Like it starts on the left and goes all the way around.
Dude, he's the most interesting young player in the NBA right now, Big R. He's the NBA's like Matt Chandler.
To
put it in terms that you can understand. Yeah.
You know what, man? And you know that's a great point though, going back to KDY. I mean, you look at somebody like a Matty Chan, and it's like, yeah, I mean, KDY, he has sort of that intellectual mind that Timmy K has, you know?
Yeah.
Which a lot of these other guys, you know, they're like good communicators, but they don't they like don't hit the depths, and
people
I think
smarter
you're right.
when they're around Timmy K. You know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely.
You can see some Timmy K. You feel smarter. And, right. and let me be clear. I'm not just being glib. Like I love Tim Keller. I've loved his books, and it's weird. I don't feel the weird like dad like oh what are we gonna do thing. That's just strange to me. That dynamic. But you know, my money's on KDY. I think we should put actual money on this. We should be wagering on this.
See, Here's my question. This is where I don't really see KDY yet. Okay, let me qualify it with yet.
How old was Keller when he became the pastor at Redeemer? I bet he was about the age KDY is now.
Yeah, he was like 40 to 45. Yeah,
okay.
So he was. Yeah, really, that's about what KDY is, right? About 40.
Yeah, right in the wheelhouse, man. Right in there. Somewhere.
But I mean, but here's the thing, though. And that's why I see KDY maybe making a transition. But KDY doesn't really speak into the culture that much. Mm-hmm. He's more of like a church guy. Like he writes books for the church. It's not so much about like convincing skeptics.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't know. I think he has the brain to do that, to go in that direction. But
he does speak a lot to sort of Christians and ethical issues, and Christians and complex cultural issues like gender and same-sex marriage and things like that. I mean, those are things he – and so culturally speaking, he's not an apologist the way that Keller is, mm-hmm. but he has some of that same sort of like soft-spoken, even-keel, methodical processing of these things from a biblical perspective. And so, mm-hmm. you know – I can see him having a similar kind of steadily growing influence in that way.
But right now, his object is really still Christians understanding the issues, not really trying to convince non-believers why this makes sense.
How much of that is because he's in Michigan, where it's
oh, dude, yeah,
it's just it's a, such a different kind. I mean, he was in the same context as like Rob Bell, and so they're both speaking to the same kind of people from opposite sides. Whereas Keller speaking to people who are, you know, completely unchurched or vocally non-Christian, and where intellectualism is a is it you have to be smart or you don't get in the door kind of thing. I feel in a place like Michigan, it's just it's a different cultural milieu.
I mean, guys, it's either going to be KDY or Francis Chan or Frankie Chan who's going to be the next TK. I mean, can we just agree on that?
Francis Chan is going to be like the next Henry Nouwen.
Frankie Chan's too ethereal. He's too mysterious, you know?
Yeah, he is, man.
I don't know. Boys.
Let's do – you know, hold on. Before you finish, let's just tell our listeners. I want to do an ep just riffing on all the current A-listers and who they might be someday.
Dude, Big R, you're so funny about this, man. You love this stuff. You're like Mel Kiper Jr. at draft time.
Yes.
Man. You love speculating about who's going to
No.
And your hair is almost as good.
I love lifestyle, right? So like you just made that comment a little while ago, Pipe, about the red carpet. I prefer the red carpet to the awards because that's where you get like a little snapshot into their life and hear them speak when, you know, when they're not trying to like thank everybody and like, you know, do the corporate professional
because
thing. I like lifestyle.
They're
stuff.
So vulnerable and honest on the red carpet. You know, everything about somebody when they're in a,
life,
when they're in a borrowed
you get to see the real Denzel on the red carpet.
Yeah, that's right.
Hi, I'm a Big walking RPC billboard. Dude. I'm going to authentically tell my story to you.
We need a red carpet for all these A-listers that you're referring to.
That's what I'm talking about. Let's do the red carpet.
Yes. Can you imagine all these guys in tailored tuxes?
Ooh, I like it.
The problem is that I can.
I can't. I can't imagine my dad in anything besides the same tweed jacket he's worn for the last 27 years.
Didn't Drisky buy him a different jacket, man? Has he never put that thing on, Pipe?
Well, he was given a black leather jacket at one point. I don't remember
oh
why.
Oh, goodness.
And he showed it to me, said, frankly, I'll never wear this, and then hug it in his closet. And I just wished that I was not 7 inches taller than him because I totally would have taken it off his hands. But
that's
no,
really
he
funny.
When he wears clothes out, he buys the exact same thing again. So
that's outstanding.
The jacket that he has now is not the exact same jacket, but it's the same model of jacket. So it's hard to imagine my dad in a tailored tux.
Here's my question. Why is there not a red carpet at these big reformed conferences that we all sort of worship at the
feet? There essentially is, Big T. It's called a pre-conference.
No, it's a pre-conference. I don't go to these things, so I don't
know.
Pre-conference
is the red – it's like can we get everybody there even a day early to talk about the same stuff we're going to talk about, you know,
in charge attendees $100 more.
In charge more.
Like, is everybody like kind of groveling around the famous people at that point? Is that the pre-conf?
Isn't that
it's a little more like –
isn't that every part of every conference?
Yeah. I mean, it's a little more like the little people can do something a little smaller and get a little bit closer –
you can get into
the
same
the
room
A-listers.
With these guys.
You can get into a smaller room with them. That's all
nice.
It is.
Wow. Yeah. That sounds amazing.
I think
the real reason there's not a red carpet is because partly because they're not very attractive and partly because fame only exists online if you're a pastor.
It's the true. Fact that these guys aren't attractive, that just makes it funnier, though.
I just don't understand that. Yeah, the lack of – man, the amount of khakis, the amount of, like, the polo shirts. I just – like, I'm astounded – you know, I'm astounded by the lack of any sort of, like, progressive fashion at any of these conferences at this point.
No,
I find
Big R, you got to – here's the thing, though. I mean, all these hipster church planning pastors, they're bringing progressive fashion into this.
They
thing.
Are.
We're going to see a bunch of skinny fitted suits and skinny ties and all that. All
but
that
those guys never rise
nonsense.
To the top. All of the speakers
they haven't
are like
yet,
frumpy.
20 years from now, right?
Because they're insufferable is the problem. So, you know, that's the one thing. I think the one thing keeping them from rising to the top, Pipe, and correct me if I'm wrong, is the fact that they're completely and utterly insufferable. Other than that, I mean, there's nothing keeping them
down. Other than that, they're great guys.
Other than that, they're terrific guys. Terrific.
Yeah, they're so relevant. They're kind of irrelevant.
Right. They're so relevant that you can't stand being in the same room with them for more than a couple of minutes.
Baby, they're so irrelevant, they don't even know it.
They don't even know how irrelevant they are. Here's my final word on this. I would like to see this. I want to see a red carpet situation with these pastors, except I want khaki tuxes. I want tuxes that are made
tweed
out of
tuxes.
Khaki or tweed tuxes is kind of an homage to like what these guys are all about. You know what I mean?
Yes. I think a tweed tux or like a tweed jacket with tailored like navy blue slacks. Something Ooh. Along those lines, but with a tux flair to it. Maybe like a wool cummerbund that sort of looks like a sweater vest. Something along those lines.
Yeah, but dude, that's as good as it's ever going to get. Because at the end of the day, we're talking about nerdist culture within like Reformanati culture. I mean, that's what it is.
Did you come up with the term Reformanati? Because if so, I'd like to congratulate you because that's a great word.
That was me and Big T on our former program. Do you want to mention the former program really quick, Big T?
Yeah, it was called what was it called? The Reformatory.
Yes.
And we came up with this term, the Reformanati. So we've been using that for a long time.
I like it. I haven't heard that before. Too. How has it not come up on this podcast? Because like this is our wheelhouse.
Yeah,
it is our wheelhouse. It should have come up. I feel terrible that it didn't.
Well, let's rebrand it. Let's bring it back out.
I'm not offended. I'm just glad it came up when it did because now it's fuel to keep all of this rolling. I'm really thankful for it. Good job,
guys. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, boys, we've certainly done what we always do on this program. We've wandered to and fro throughout these topics. I feel like we're off the schneid. We're back. We're back on the horse. I'm back emotionally.
It's good to have you back,
Big T.
Oh, thank you so much, guys. And I've enjoyed this. And until next time, Rachel, to hell to Evans.
Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. Resonate has helped us with our editing and mastering pretty much from the beginning of the podcast. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Mark and Jake do a fantastic and timely job with all sorts of podcast services. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast.
Hey there, it's Nicole Eunice from the How to Study the Bible podcast, and I'd love to invite you to join us as we weekly discover a passage of God's Word together. From beginning to end, from principles to practicals, we are here to make sure that God's Word is powerful and relevant to your life. If that sounds like something you're looking for, I would love to invite you to subscribe. You can go to lifeaudio.com and search How to Study the Bible, and we'll see you there.